24, 25, 28 magnitude, and I'm going to jump down to 16.5 for a change where we have a lot of photons. And I'll be talking about optical observation with 1 microsecond time resolution, and we do simultaneous photometry. This was work done with Rob Robinson when I was in Texas on race timing at UMass Amherst. And what I want to point out, this light curve here is not an artist's conception. This is a real observed data. You can look at the signal-to-noise ratio in this data. For those of you who work in X-rays and gamma rays and are limited by photons, we have total about 200 million photons, and I'll talk about all of them today. Okay. So, brief information, everybody knows this, but I decided to put it anyways. We know the age of this from the supernova remnant, and we have a characteristic age. There is a discrepancy between those two. And this information can be used if we figure out what's really going on. And the important number is the V magnitude is 16.6, so we can very easily observe this object. And it shows very similar double peak pulse profile at all observed wavelengths from radio to the TEV gamma rays. So when we started, the goal was to fully resolve the light curve. Before this work, there were some predictions about a flat top and a cusp at the peak of the main pulse with about 40 microsecond width. And the resolution of that data was about 22 microseconds, so which shows 1 microsecond time resolution. And we have this instrument, standing photometer, that I will talk about, which does simultaneous observations, and we wanted to look at phase result, color variations, and just wanted to see if we can see something like what is seen in radio, like giant pulses, where you see emission up 100 to 1,000 times in a specific pulse compared to an average pulse and microstructures. And I'll show you some evidence for microstructures later on. So what is this instrument, Steining photometer? It was built by Ray Steining. It is a simultaneous four-color photometer. It uses three dichroics. Let me show you what it looks like on paper. Light is not coming. Okay, the light from the telescope is coming through here, and we use a depolarizer because these three dichroics are sensitive to polarization. And using these three dichroics, we split the light into four parts. There are four photoelectric tubes which collect the light. So we get simultaneous observations in the four pass bands. And the way timing works in this instrument is that we have a counter on the side, which is fed by GPS receiver. At the start of the run, we reset this using the 1 hertz pulse, which is a second. And then it is being fed with the 1 megahertz pulse, so we know the time in microsecond. Anytime a photon is observed in any one of the tubes, a trigger is sent out and we read out the time. So we get the relative time to microseconds. But there is a source of problem in this instrument. What happens is by the time you detect a photon to the time the hardware and the software interacts and goes to read out the counter, there is a delay. And this delay varies from observation to observation depending on the start of the clock. So we needed something to calibrate it. And that was done by introducing a diode over here, which was fed by the 1 hertz pulse. So whenever the 1 hertz pulse comes, the diode introduces approximately about 4 photons every second. And they are mixed with the signal from the pulsar. And when we take our data and fold it at 1 second period, this is what we see. This is the signal from the diode. And everything else is masked as noise, and this is wide, 1 microsecond wide. And this delay here, which is about 7,000 microseconds, gives us the time delay from the arrival of the photon at the instrument to the time the instrument records. And this number varied from somewhere around 6,000 to 8,000 from different observations. And this is what gives us the calibration information to get the timing correct. So we have absolute time, 1 microsecond. And we have a lot of calibration data. And in this instrument, the length of the observation is limited by the amount of RAM available on the computer. And when these observations were done in 1995, we had 30 meg of RAM, which was a big number at that time. We can change it now. So about the observations which were done at the McDonald Observatory 2.7 meter telescope, 6 nights in November 1995. Two of them were photometric nights with about 1 arcsecond in better seeing, and 4 were moderate. 200 million photons approximately. And for each photon, we have the time of arrival, and we have the pass band U, B, V, and R where it arrived.
What's the efficiency of the setup?
I think it's about 15% or something like that.
Sorry?
This was a further effort? Yeah. That sounds good. Okay, so the data analysis procedure, which is fold the data at 1 second period and figure out where the diode signal shows up. For each data set, that gives you a time that you need to take off from your measured time to give you the correct time. And then we use our own code to compute the barycentric corrections, which are accurate to fraction of a microsecond, and then use the Jordi Bank Crab ephemeris to fold the data and get the pulse profile. Okay, this is what it looks like. Everybody knows this. In U, B, V, and R, this is the radio phase here, and you see that it arrives at the radio phase, but not exactly. Okay. First thing, at the peak of the main pulse, we do not see anything which we can claim to be a cusp or a flat top. It's hard to say if it's there or not, but it looks like a smooth transition from the rising to the falling branch. So we would like to claim that there is no flat top or cusp at the peak of the main pulse. And that has some implications for some of the outer gap theories. Okay, about the timing, this is an interesting result. What we find is that our optical data is 140 microseconds ahead of radio. This is the X-ray point from Arnold Roth's XTU observations. It is about 300 microseconds ahead of radio. And there are 2 Figaro observations in gamma rays, which are around 350 and 600 microseconds ahead of radio. So effectively, what we are seeing is, when you're looking at the pulsar, you see gamma rays coming first, then X-rays, then optical, and then radio. One of the ways to explain this was that in the magnetosphere, there is a stratification. Gamma rays are being produced further out, optical is relatively in, and radio is the closest to the object. But that doesn't seem to work very well when you go to the radio range, because in radio, you see an inverse mapping between the frequency and the lag, which is the radio frequency to radius mapping. So this is something that needs to be explained, and we have no idea what's going on over here.
Is the inverse correlation for the crab specifically, or filters in general?
I think this is for the crab only, where we have enough.
No, in the radio you mentioned.
Oh, radio, it's seen in many, many pulsars.
Yeah, is it also seen in the crab?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So in some senses, if you go further down in frequency, it sort of turns over. So this is one of the results unexplained, like many other things. Okay, the second thing we compute is the ratio of the fluxes in different bands as a function of the phase. Okay, this is a B-band light curve, and corresponding to that, this is the flux ratio in U-band versus the R-band, which is in some senses similar to a hardness ratio. So what we see is that the hardest spectrum is observed in the bridge region, there is some correspondence along the main pulse with the shape of the light curve and along the falling region of the secondary pulse. Similar behavior is also observed in gamma rays, where the harder spectrum is observed in the bridge region between the main pulse and the secondary pulse.
Have you correct for sky?
Sky, we just...
supernova,
yes. Okay, so we just subtract the non-pulse, but there were some earlier observations which claimed that before the main pulse, it goes down to zero. But now we have recent observations by, there's a published paper by Golden et al. Where they see some unpulsed emission at this phase. So if, even if we account for that, we just subtract everything else. So this is just the pulse flux. And models do not explain this so far. So another problem for theorists. Okay. So having done that, since we have too many photons, we decided to look at the statistics of the photons. Okay, this is the conclusions I already talked about. And there are three statistics we looked at, and I'll be talking about two. Okay, the first is the number of photons per period, which is in some senses looking for giant pulses, because in giant pulses you see a lot of emission in a particular pulse. So if we see some significant variations, that could be an indicator of giant pulses. The second thing we look is the time between arrival of successive photons, and third is the autocorrelation. I will come to that in just a minute. Okay. This plot here is the distribution of photons per period converted into probability from the actual counts. The solid points are the observed, and this line is a model which incorporates a Poissonian distribution and accounting for atmospheric scintillations, and seems to fit the data very well. So we are not seeing much of an evidence other than these two points where we see a significant deviation from a Poissonian distribution. This line over here represents the power law distribution of radio giant pulse structure. I mean, number of energy versus number of times you see that. So this doesn't correspond to giant pulses as far as we can tell.
So did you get a good measurement of the scintillation power at with your size of your telescope?
Yes. I mean, no. Actually, we use the scintillation models convolve them with the Poissonian distribution to come up with this. So I'm not claiming that we are measuring scintillation.
But the model worked quite well.
Yes.
This is what Brown-Gilroy?
I don't remember. Something which was published in 97 or something. I don't remember. Okay, so the second thing we look for is autocorrelation of the photon arrival times. And the autocorrelation is defined by the product at a delay, and this is for a finite length equally sampled time series. And what happens in our case is that a typical run is about 75 minutes long, and we have 1 microsecond time resolution, which ends up giving us 4.5 billion data points. And only about 2 million of them have non-zero counts in the B band. So it's a very sparse data set, and we have an algorithm which uses the sparsity of the data to increase the computation speed by a factor of about 100. And then it took me about 2 months on 2 ultra-5s nighttime usage to come to this structure. Okay, what this represents is the autocorrelation as a function of phase lag, where this range here is one period of the pulsar. So this bottom one is the autocorrelation for the first period. The second one is the autocorrelation at lag of whatever it is here, plus one period. So this is going all the way up to 10 periods. And what I want you to concentrate on, okay, you have to bear with me on this, is that right here, the shape is different from the shape at all the rest. Everybody agrees with me.
You mean because it curves over an emerald?
Yeah, everything else curves over, but this thing sort of keeps going up straight. So what we do is we take the average of these top nine and divide all of them out.
Isn't this difference statistically significant?
Yes. And actually, the general shape of this curve is basically the correlation of the main peak with itself at phase lag 0.4, main peak with the secondary peak at phase lag 0.6, secondary peak to main peak, and then from the main peak to the next peak. And once we divide it out with the average, it will start becoming more and more clear that we do indeed see an excess correlation at very, very short time lags.
Okay, so let me try to understand. So that's the correlation of the next pulse, or is it the auto? Is this just the autocorrelation at zero lag?
This is the autocorrelation at zero lag, lag 1 microsecond, and so on and so forth. And this is 1 period plus 1 microsecond, and so on and so forth.
So the bottom line is the autocorrelation of the data.
No, this is all. Yeah. This is going from lag 0 to 5,000 microseconds. Now I'm going to zoom into this region and draw some lines to help my point and change the scale and things like that. So this is what you would expect if there was no excess autocorrelation. But what we see is there is indeed some excess at very, very short lags. This is now 100 microseconds and 1,000 microseconds here.
But that could be instrumental.
I'll come to that. It's not. Okay, this is the field star. It doesn't show anything. I haven't taken out, I haven't divided by anything, so it's at a large number, but it doesn't show any significant deviation.
What's the magnitude of that?
Sorry?
What's the magnitude?
Magnitude?
Similar amount of data. Signal to noise.
Oh, signal to noise. This one has, I think, close to 2 million photons total.
I'm sorry?
2 million photons in here.
So it's a factor of 100 less sensitive.
No. This is just from one observation, which has about 4 or 5 million photons.
It's similar.
It's just within a factor of 2. So this is definitely not instrumental. We checked that. So this is internal to the object. Now the question becomes, what could it be? And actually, this is seen in all the different bands. That is for B, this is for V. And what we like to claim is that this is an evidence of microstructure. If you look at the radio literature on microstructure, microstructure is not understood very well, but usually it's modeled in terms of short noise, where you have a short where you see a lot of emission coming together. And if you take the autocorrelation of a typical shot, you see usually only one upturn, depending on the parameters of the shot. So in some senses, if we didn't do anything really, really wrong, which we believe we did not, this is a first evidence of a similar thing to microstructures outside the radio range.
So is it possible, is the star that you measured, is that variable?
Scrap pulsar.
Sorry, the other star.
It's.
What I'm asking about is it possible if there's an afterpulse in your machinery?
No. This is seen all 6 nights, all the data sets, all passbands. It's never seen in the field star.
Have you checked this against your diode?
Yes. Diode doesn't show anything like that.
Have that signal to noise. Can you check? I mean, you should be able to get an input signal to noise.
No, I don't have that plot here, but I can show you on my computer. So this is definitely not an instrumental effect as far as we can tell. And I think that's pretty definite. So this is the first evidence of microstructure outside of the radio band.
So what you're really saying is that each pulse is just slightly different from
no, one to one. No, what this is suggesting is that if you see a photon coming, or if you talk in terms of the emission process, when you emit, you're emitting a bunch of photons together.
difficult task of the
millisecond. Of millisecond and shorter. Yes.
What's the fractional amount of this after postman? The 1% level? Or?
Yeah.
So I'll integrate it up over to 3 milliseconds. You see a total of about 1%.
Yeah, a few percent. And I think with that, I'll conclude my talk. Questions? Suggestions, comments, what are all these we are seeing?
Yes, can you say that this is some indication for some coherent mechanism of radiation?
Exactly.
It is usual for radio, but yes. Not unusual at higher
energies. Yes, but... Yes, I guess you can say that, but... But it's very hard to come up with some mechanism which works for this high energies, for very coherent radiation.
Why?
Given that we don't know what the mechanism is in the first place.
Yes, okay.
Do you have polarization information?
No.
That
was thrown out on purpose.
What would you see if you throw it out?
I don't know. Or if you find that.
Often, I mean, you know, usually if your instrument is sensitive to a physically interesting parameter, you try to.
See, the problem is that dichroics are themselves sensitive to polarization. So you are basically going to, if your signal is also polarized, you are going to convolve the polarization signature of the signal with the polarization signature of the dichroic, and deconvolving that is extremely difficult or impossible. So you just make the signal depolarized before it goes in.
How accurate is your photometry?
Fraction of a percent. I would say.
Can you actually look for variations in the flux of the crab on?
Yes, and there we did find that the flux compared to the observations that were done in 92 went down by 2 ± 2%. But that was a systematic variability because this is a new mode of the instrument that we used and it's not very well calibrated. In absolute terms.
What about within a single observation?
That's very hard to do. We don't get that many photons. We're only getting 500 photons per second or something like that.
What else is this instrument useful? I mean, it's an analytic photometer, very fast.
Yes. Primarily, it's used for CV work. Cataclysmic variables?
Yeah, no, understood, but microsecond.
No,
yeah.
No.
You don't need microsecond.
No, this is a special mode of the instrument. It works in many, many different modes. The standard mode of observation is that you do integrations.
Yeah.
And then we can go up to 0.1 millisecond. But it was modified for this work in this special way.
Did you try doing a correlation between two different bands?
Not yet.
If it's truly in the object and not in the instrument,
mm-hmm.
at least at the very least, if it's not in the instrument, you know, if it's in the instrument, you know, in the photometers, then you would expect it to disappear if you correlated two different bands. But it would still be there if it were either past the photometer.
Yes. I need 2 ultrafiles for 2 months. Because so, basically limited by the computational power we had at that time.
Are there any other pulsars you can do?
Probably not.
You can't see Vela from...
We can see it with a big telescope, but one of the big problems is that our observations are background limited for Vela. And Vela, the pulse fraction is also very small. We estimated that we could observe Vela on a 10-meter telescope with this instrument, which is 24 and a half. Something like that. Is it
eclipsing?
That's fainter than
that.
What is the magnitude of that?
10 zero, so 21.
I don't know, the pulse itself hasn't been detected.
But the LMC, the Hoppo 540, I mean, I guess you can't see that with this telescope, but that's pretty bright.
Yeah. So this instrument is available. If you want, we can talk about it, schedule some observations. But we still don't understand what's going on with CRAB, so is it worthwhile getting more data? That's one of the questions I ask everybody.
Good. Good. Thanks.
Thank you.